Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So again, Simon, you're saying a very tiny percentage appeared to be mentally ill. How so?
Well, just in terms of the answers that they would give, that they were often not sequential. You began to have this feeling, this is someone who has issues in how they express themselves. It just didn't really seem to fit in with other reports. Whereas with other reports, you would often get people who were clearly high-functioning individuals with jobs and lives who had had this experience at some point in their life that they were just trying to make sense of. And that is what you get with the vast majority of responses. And a category that I particularly like are adults remembering an experience they had when they were kids, because I think there's something very precious about that. It's like there's this little stone that they've been carrying around and polishing in their pocket for years, and they finally, often for the first time, get it down on paper and talk about this experience, and you can see it remain very special to them over 40, 50, 60 years.
You know, I always get the impression here that children are in many ways more sensitive to things that might be supernatural. But decades of cultural conditioning destroys that sensitivity or suppresses it.
Yeah, I mean, this is an old idea, isn't it? The idea that children, we used to talk about virgins, the idea that someone who hadn't really achieved puberty, who hadn't gone through this process, that children have this greater sensibility. This is why, if you go back to the Middle Ages, that if someone wanted to contact the spirit world, they would find a young child as the medium to do that. And I suspect there is some truth in this. There's something in the innocence of children that allows them to take experiences at face value. At least for me, I can only speak for me, but for me, those are the most interesting accounts in the fairy census. Maybe also because to some extent, they're often, this is maybe an instinct of mine, but they're the least conditioned by culture. These are young men and women, very young men and women, sometimes 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, in this kind of bracket. And you can see that they have this experience that often is really quite unique.
Well, I know you have a subgroup interest in that is kids who've had experience while in bed.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a fascinating group. I should say, first of all, that something like, I think it's a quarter to a third of all experiences in the fairy census took place just as someone was going to bed, just as they were waking up or in the middle of the night. Okay, so this is a huge subgroup. And then if you look at children, there are many of these experiences where children trying to go to sleep or waking up in the middle of the night have some kind of encounter with supernatural beings that they later consider to be fairies. And one of the nice things when you have a survey as big as the fairy census with 1,000 records, I mean, it can sound a little bit isolated, children who are sleeping, but when you actually go through the Excel sheet and isolate this kind of category, you can very quickly have 70 or 80 experiences that you can put together. So you start to have not huge numbers, but numbers where you can begin to generalize.
I know one case that I ran across recently, and I don't think it was from the fairy census, and I've read both of them extensively, was the one where the little boy in a house that they just recently moved into, he was constantly being bothered at night as he was trying to sleep, and he was young enough that he was still in a crib, I guess, from a little man who would basically berate him, just come into his room and say he was a bad child, an evil child. His parents didn't love him, just horrible things. And the kid got to the point where he didn't want to go to bed at night. And the little guy even brought a friend one time who chastised the other little man. Says, why are you saying things like that? Leave the poor kid alone.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating story.
This story, I'm 90% sure that this is the Bonnie experience. Mm-hmm. This is about a child in Canada. I think he was 3 or 4 when he had these experiences. And he was visited by this being over a series of months. And the thing that works very well is that on one occasion he brought a friend, and the friend basically said to Bonnie, who was this rather nasty fairy, you know, you shouldn't treat him like this, but these experiences are sometimes quite similar, so there may be even another one around. I came across another example of this. One of the projects I have going on in the background is I want to do a historical fairy census where I gather together experiences from before the Second World War. Mm. And these experiences would be anyone who'd had a fairy encounter, basically. And I came across a beautiful one from the 1920s of a woman in London. This was a mother. And she used to send her little boy to bed and tell him a story, you know, very normal stuff. But the little boy would then say, "Mommy, don't go away because I'm worried about the poke people." And the mom said, what on earth are the poke people? P-O-K-E. And she said, "They're these people who come along and they have these little spears and they poke me." And she said, the mother said, "Well, do they hurt you?" And he said, no, they just jab me a little bit because they don't want me to go to sleep. And the mother was absolutely unconscious of this, but she was convinced by her child's testimony, and he too was in that same kind of range of 3 to 5. So there are these fascinating experiences out there. And of course, what you make of them, who knows?
Now, I also wonder, how much of a real event does a small child remember? Now, we're all different, but I do remember being in a crib, hearing people talking in the other room, didn't understand any of it, and not being very happy. And that's my only early childhood memory. So it must be like I was less than a year old. So we hear stories here, 3 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old. How much of this stuff are we really remembering? Or is it something that maybe we mentioned to our parents at the time and they gave us different versions and we picked up on it?
Yeah. I mean, these are classic problems with children's memories, aren't they? There's the other one of children having a memory which isn't actually based on the experience but is based on a photograph they've been shown of the experience. These kind of short circuits in the way we think of the past, and particularly our own childhood. I find all of this a fascinating subject. And you also have, of course, the problem that these are things that are taking place as children are going to sleep, as children are waking up in the middle of the night. And as we have with our own experiences, to what extent can we say that these are not dream experiences that just seem incredibly real? So there are all kind of objections that you could put to this being a real experience. But I suppose from my point of view, this is the luxury of studying something in terms of what kind of people have experience and under what kind of conditions. That doesn't matter too much. What really matters to me is the significance that these memories have in the lives of these grown children. And again, the way that it's just like a stone that they've kept in their pocket, a pebble they've kept polishing right through the years. And even when they're 50, 60, 70, it remains something special from their childhood.
Well, okay, I guess maybe I'm an exception. I have nothing, zilch, zip, from my childhood, anywhere that I can determine, any way I can fathom. I just don't remember any of it. I remember things like how I got interested in UFOs. I remember some really nasty dreams, but no mementos. Or maybe I'm not that kind of person. I'm not really the pack rat type. But we have so many questions to ask Dr. Simon Young. talking about his fairy senses. Tim Swartz, Gene Steinberg, fascinating stuff. You're in the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on our distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to GCNfood.com. GCNfood.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, Simon, I was going to ask you, as you've collected this information for the fairy censuses, or sensei, or whatever we'll call it, you like that, just destroying the language, everybody will appreciate that. Were you able to build profiles of people who are apt to report this? age, sex, background, cultural backgrounds, things like that?
Well, of course, you've, in your question, you've got immediately the most important point. It's not who was most likely to have these experiences, but who was most likely to report them. And so everything I say from now on has to be understood in that light. I think I'm right in saying that about 65% of those who reported were women. So there seems to be this strong bias towards females. And my understanding is that in UFO tends to be more male witnesses, ditto Sasquatch encounters. So maybe some of these encounters are really quite gendered, and fairies in the end are a more female element. So this was definitely something that stood out from the records. In terms of the profiles, yeah, there was always this magic period from, say, 0 to 10, when children would have these experiences. That's a group that stands out. And I think those are the two main groups in terms of the profiles of people who are likely to have these experiences. I suppose another thing I'll just throw into the mix is that one of, for me, the most important questions I asked was the following. It was the equivalent of a multiple choice. Do you rarely or never have supernatural experiences? Do you sometimes have supernatural experiences, or do you frequently have supernatural experiences? And understandably, the third category came up a lot within the survey. In other words, there are people who also claim to have ghost experiences, UFO experiences, and had also had rich fairy experiences.
You know, I'm going to mention a couple of things here. Since we're talking of experiences, no mementos from my childhood. Memories of before I was 10 years old, maybe 8 to 10 years old, I used to have recurring nightmares of some large, dark thing coming close to me, and then I wake up with a cold sweat. And this happened for a period of time. Can't recall. Now, it may also be my brother's fault, because this is when we shared a bedroom, and he would like to tell me scary stories or play scary stories on the radio, because it was those days, and maybe he was just having a laugh at my expense, whatever. I remember during this period, and Tim and Simon, you can both decide what you think of it, where I travel around the neighborhood and smell something that was later interpreted as burnt sulfur. And that's, of course, something, a phenomenon well known in the UFO field. The big dark thing, I don't know.
I was just going to say, if we have time before the ads, that
please,
you have the nightmare experience. But, of course, someone else may have processed those experiences as being a supernatural experience. And I think that this is something that when you study the supernatural, you have to be constantly aware of, that different people could have very similar experiences. But some people would say, okay, well, that was an interesting form of audio hallucination, or that was a nightmare when I was a child. Whereas someone else would interpret it more actually as a supernatural event.
Okay. Of course, the odor of burnt sulfur has been something in connection with UFO encounters, as Tim will testify.
Where were you living at the time, Gene?
Oh, in Brooklyn, New York, in the Brownsville section. Okay, so Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York, is very smelly. Is that what you're saying, Tim?
No. Not deliberately, at least, Gene.
Well, these days it's very expensive.
Yeah.
I remember, for example, that my dad could pay the rent on a two-bedroom apartment in a brownstone second floor. And he had one job. My mother didn't work, although she did from time to time. He'd support the family. We never starved. It was fine. Today, that building is still there. I'll give you the address. Look it up on Google Earth. 102 Newport Street, Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn 11212. Look it up. It's still there. And I'll tell you, it's probably been rebuilt since the 50s and 60s. Today, I doubt that you can get a similar apartment for less than $3,000 a month.
Ouch. Mm-mm.
Let me segue to the second encounter or whatever it was, second series. I'm in my 20s, working at a radio station outside of Philadelphia. My wife and I live in a two-story unit, kind of like in a brownstone. We had both the first and second floor. And for some reason, we were sleeping on a bare mattress on the first floor, and she awakens me and says, "Did you see that water elemental in the far corner?" Didn't have my glasses on, so I didn't see much of anything, maybe a blur. Went back to sleep. That was it. I then, more recently, and of course we were divorced after 10 years, I remarried, but we're still in touch with Geneva. So I give her a note just not long ago and said, "Do you remember this at all?" Because she was interested in studying lore about earth spirits. She remembered none of it, so maybe I just made it up.
Yeah, I find these experiences amazing. And when you go back to those categories that I talked about, no supernatural experiences, occasional or frequent, I think a lot of it just depends, again, on how we deal with these experiences and whether we put them down to being dreams or... I'm sure that if I were to answer that survey, I would put no or very rare supernatural experiences. But I've had a series of experiences that could be... I'm using perhaps an unfair word here, but skewed to be understood as supernatural experiences. I've just chosen not to do so. But of course, for a survey like the Fairy Census or any other survey of the supernatural, it becomes really interesting how people perceive themselves in that way.
I had no perception, except as someone who didn't have many experiences. I was writing about them. I was talking to people who saw UFOs, talking to people who saw Bigfoot. We had a magazine going. Sure.
But out of interest, Gene, if you were to answer that question, would you say no or rarely? Would you say occasional or would you say frequent?
I would say rarely, because we had something happen when I was preteen, and then we had something happen in my, I guess, the mid-20s. So I would say very rarely. I know I've been around people who saw things. Like in 1975, we sponsored a UFO convention at Valley Forge in Pennsylvania. This is outside of Philadelphia, maybe half an hour from Philadelphia. And we focused, my business partner and I, on running the convention, making sure everybody paid, that sort of thing. We'll get to part two in a moment with Gene, Simon, Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers, there's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
News update. Big donors turning out at a huge campaign fundraiser for Donald Trump in Palm Beach, Florida, Saturday night. The event expected to take in $50 million. That's way more money than President Biden raised in an event with former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. That event taking in $25 million. Donald Trump on his social media platform, Truth Social, writing, "It's the biggest night in fundraising of all time. We will double up the Biden number of last week at Radio City. City. People are desperate for change. They want to make America great again. Explanation point. Today marks 6 months as the war between Israel and Hamas rages on. It's the result of Hamas slaughtering 1,200 Jewish people at a music festival and at their homes. It is believed 99 hostages are still alive and being held by Hamas terrorists. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, this is James Fox, director of The Phenomenon and Moment of Contact. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So here's where things get interesting. So we have the convention, and we lost a little money. I guess it wasn't so bad. And several of my close friends who were there said, "Did you see the UFO last night?" I, of course, saw nothing. And it seemed like a medium-level sighting where it may have been weird, it may have been conventional, who knows, but it was a UFO. Then somebody else, my business partner or ex-business partner, used to say about me, "I am a focal point, that I bring people of various views together for whatever purpose, the magazine or maybe this radio show." I have no idea whether that means anything or he was just saying. There you go.
Hello, Father.
No. I'm sorry, I don't know if you heard this, but my younger daughter, who should have been in bed about an hour and a half ago, walks into the room while I was just mulling over Jean's experiences. Apologies for that.
Well, you know, maybe she has an experience to talk about.
Well, listen, no, but Jean, when you were talking about bringing people together, she walked in exactly on cue, so that's probably the proof of what your old business partner was saying.
So before they take me away, haha, what do you think?
About the question of whether you can be a kind of a focal point for these experiences.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely credible to me, and I find it particularly interesting that you would put yourself in that first category, in other words, no or rare supernatural experiences, and like you say, you're quite doubtful about these two experiences, and yet you have this incredible interest in the supernatural. And in my experience, when you deal with people who are, let's say, focal in these areas, they often have that combination. In other words, they're not experiencing things, or at least they don't perceive themselves as experiencing things that are supernatural, but they seem to have people around them who do have these experiences. And here cause and effect, of course, get hopelessly muddled up, but I personally find it suggestive.
Suggestive of what?
No, suggestive that there may be something going on there. I wonder in a very modest way if I'm not in a similar category. Someone who has a very low number of experiences, but in my family and in my friend group, lots of people around me seem to have experiences.
Well, my wife, my current wife, Barbara, told me of one experience that I'll reveal because it's nothing big. Now, remember, she's a nice Jewish girl from Coney Island in Brooklyn, New York. And she says one night she saw, looking over her in her bed, a large figure with a beard looking like the common image of Christ. Nice Jewish girl seeing a Christ-like image. One time, that was it. Now, I tried to go into the possibility she was dreaming of something, but she seemed to feel she saw something genuine. She had one more experience. When her mother died of a heart attack while suffering from pancreatic cancer, at that particular moment that her mom died, we were over at my sister-in-law's house when all this was happening, she felt this intense force or pain in her gut as her mom was leaving the living. Is that common?
I mean, these death time experiences are arguably the single most common form of the supernatural. In other words, let's say my father-in-law, unbeknownst to me, is actually very ill. He has a heart attack and I wake up in the night with a great sense of unease. And of course, in more extreme versions, you'll often have come across these, but I see an image of him, have some kind of experience like this. And in the 19th century, the period that I studied the most, this was the way that people like you and me who were interested in the supernatural back in the 1800s, this was the specific category that they chose to study most of all, because they felt that, again, there was a possibility of being empirical. I could go and question your wife about the exact time. I could get you to write a letter saying that, yes, she had this experience and she told me about it before we heard about her mother's death. And so there's been lots on that. And of course, this is, again, a very common, in terms of the supernatural, perhaps the most common category.
Now, remember, when she felt her mother's death, we were at my sister-in-law's home where this was happening, okay, where her mother undergoing this final throes of life and dying at that moment. So it was near simultaneous as far as we could determine. It wasn't something that happened later. She told me this when it was happening, and I learned that around that time, based on the emergency medics, the EMC people coming over, that the emergency medics came over, and this was when she died. So there was no doubt about that. And when she told me this, my wife, she didn't know her mom had died at that point. She just had this feeling.
Yeah, so when I started studying the supernatural, I was skeptical about almost everything. And 10 years later, I'm still skeptical about most material, but I have to say that this is one of these areas where I've seeded ground that I've just been so blown away by the quality of evidence from deathbed experiences like this that I'm beginning to think there must be something in it.
I also, though it might not be related, think that some people know when they are dying. Not because they have an illness and they know, well, it's touch and go. Maybe I'll last another week, another day. I mean, they seem to be healthy enough. The night before he died, my father calls me, and normally our conversations would be very brief. This is the day before my birthday, 1988, September 8th. And we have a longer than normal conversation where he wants to be reassured I'm okay. I'm doing okay. We have a small child. Their marriage is great. You know, everything is normal. Or as normal as I can be, which is another story we can do on 10 other shows. So the conversation ends, like I said, more than the normal conversation with him. The next afternoon, my nephew calls and says that my father died that day on my birthday, suddenly, while at a senior center playing cards with friends. So the impression I get here, not that he picked my birthday to die. My brother-in-law died one day before my birthday. That's another story. It's that he knew when he called me the night before that this was it for him and he needed to be reassured about my situation. Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's the classic thing, isn't it, with death, that part of dying is being able to let go. And of course, knowing that your loved ones are doing okay is one of the ways that people let go. For me, as far as my worldview goes, I find that what happened with your father is much more comprehensible in terms of the laws of physics and the laws of the universe. I have no doubt that on an unconscious level, people do have a sense of what's coming. And I think that that's probably true of most of us in most of our lives. I find what happened to your wife, though, far more disturbing because A, I find it convincing, but B, I just have no idea of how you start to explain the mechanics of this. Whereas accepting that the evidence for this experience and thousands of other experiences like it are really quite convincing.
From fairy lore to what? We've got a lot more to talk about with Simon Young. Let me also tell you, listeners, he will stick with us for the After the Paracast podcast. So any one of the 10,000 subjects we don't get into on this show, we'll get into there. We're covering, of course, the fairy census and more. Simon, Gene, Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
This is Jennifer Stein, executive producer of The Disclosure Dialogues. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we have Dr. Simon Young joining us. We're discussing the supernatural, fairy lore, and all the things that he studied, and the fairy census, number one, number two. Before I ask you, though, one other question that I notice in your bio, Italian food history? How so?
Over the years, one of my main sources of income has been teaching at various universities in central Italy. And by a series of accidents, I ended up teaching about 15 years ago, Italian food culture and Italian food history. And it was a subject that when I began, I was completely out of my depth. In fact, I still look back and cringe thinking of those early lessons with these bright and keen university students and me sounding, I suspect, like a Wikipedia page. I've now been teaching for 10 to 15 years, and I'm very interested in food generally. I'm a hedonist, I suppose. Of course, Italy is a great place to eat and eat well. So there you are.
Yeah, but how close is a pizza in Italy to a pizza in America?
Well, not very close at all. But of course, that's the fascination that the U.S. has created its own version of the pizza that in some respects we could argue, I don't want to irritate any of my Italian family, but in some cases is superior. One of the things I always say to students, particularly when I talk to American students, they're always very shocked by this, but that pizza comes not from Italy, but from just one small part of Italy, Naples. Pizza has been eaten in Naples probably for about 200 years. The pizza that is eaten in the rest of Italy does not come from Naples. It comes from New Jersey. Pizza only began to be eaten in the rest of Italy in the 50s and above all the 60s. And what happened was no one in the rest of Italy would eat anything from Naples because Naples has a rather bad reputation. And it was American prestige after the Second World War that exported the pizza around the world, including to the rest of Italy.
Okay, so if you go to Domino's, there's one in Italy, or many.
There are the equivalents, but all of them owe something to the Italian migrants in the late 1800s on the East Coast who recreated Neapolitan pizza in the New World.
So interesting here, and we'll get back to the supernatural in a moment, unless pizza is supernatural. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. This was Brownsville in East Flatbush. Almost every other block, it was a pizza place. And the quality of the pizza was consistent. I could literally go from one of them to another and get really great pizza. There were delis, kosher delis. Same thing, very consistent. The knishes were very similar.
The same would be true for bagels, because in New York, they had a union, a bagel baker's union, where they consistently had this recipe they followed from place to place. So if my dad wanted to pick up a dozen bagels for the next week, wherever he'd go, he'd get the same bagels. Of course, that's before they started adding all these eccentric versions, like jalapeno bagels and everything bagels. The original, pure New York bagel was consistent.
But that's changed, has it? So it's no longer the case.
I don't even think the union exists anymore. In fact, the story I told last week about our encounter with Major Kehoe in Luray, Virginia, and the encounter with NICAP and Richard Hall that ended up badly. One of the people with me was an old friend from Brooklyn, Marty Salkind, and he came from a bagel baker family where, literally speaking, your family would sponsor you if you want to be a baker as an apprentice. And then you'd pass that apprenticeship and become a baker. You'd be assured of a full-time job for the rest of your life, a generous pension. None of that exists anymore. He was accepted as a bagel baker, never heard from him again. Are there any conclusions that could be drawn from your fairy senses and all the studies you've done?
Wow. Well, I think I would just go back, at the risk of being monotonous, to what I said at the beginning, that in as much as I've learned anything in the past 10 years studying this stuff, it is that the supernatural is a constant in human experience. And you can be a super materialist and say it's all in our brains, or you can be a super supernaturalist and say it's all out there, but it's a constant and it will always be there. But this is my take on it. It's not something that we're going to edit out of human nature, and to try to do so is just very, very misguided. Whereas the supernatural is always there, the forms it takes changes. The forms it takes change constantly. And I think that for someone who's interested in the supernatural, in the end, that is the task that faces you. You have to be able to chart the changes within the supernatural. And right through this podcast, I've perhaps rudely taken for granted, hope I don't irritate any of your listeners with this, but that UFOs, Sasquatch are all part in the end of the same supernatural family as fairies, ghosts and the rest. And yeah, that the fascination of the supernatural is the way that as our societies change, the supernatural will take on new forms.
You make a very good point there, I think. We have very much advocated on the Paracast, Tim, myself, Chris O'Brien and others, that a lot of the things people see are very much related in one way or another, but there are people who want to segregate that. But that doesn't mean you should ignore the information. So what do you have coming up? Are you going to work on a third edition of the fairy census, or are you fairied out, as they say?
No, I'm a little bit fairied out. When you do the fairy census at the end, when you're actually getting it all into order, it is just 150 hours of slog with Excel sheets and editing. And so I'm very, very keen for people to send in fairy accounts, but I think it will be a couple of years before I edit up the next one, before I have time to edit up the next one. And so at the moment, yeah, I'm very interested in fairies. As I confessed to you before, I'm presently looking at mermaid accounts and enjoying that a lot. And then also I'm editing a book on changelings. This is part of fairy lore, and about to bring out another book as the editor with a series of historians on the social supernatural, so fairies, pixies and the like. So I try and keep my finger in a lot of different pies at the same time. And the way the fairy census has worked so far is that I just gather very slowly this harvest in, and then every 4 or 5 years I release the next fairy census.
If someone wants to know more about what you do, where can they check you out?
I think a really good place to go is with my dear colleague Chris Woodyard. I do a podcast called Boggis and Banshee, and it's a very modest thing. It doesn't aspire to your guys' achievements here, We do it once a month. We take a special subject in the supernatural. So, for example, this month we did the Philip experiment, a famous experiment with creating a ghost in 1970s Toronto. We look at these things. If people wanted to catch up with me, I'd just go and listen to the podcast. There's a lot of stuff on there. If anyone's interested in the fairy census, first of all, if you're interested in submitting an experience, I and future generations would be incredibly grateful. All you need to do is just type in fairy census to Google or your search engine of choice, and it will bring you straight there. If you're interested in reading the fairy census, if you do the same thing and you go to that page, you will find the links to the fairy census online, and then you can find the stuff there and freely download it, or you can buy paperback versions.
You can check us out on Threads, X, Facebook, look for the Paracast. Check out theparacast.store for branded merchandise, four logos for fans of the Paracast, theparacast.store, theparacast.shop. We also have a streaming service, the Paracast Plus. Go to theparacast.plus for quick sign up. You get this show without the network ads, better audio, and the exclusive bonus after the Paracast podcast, where Simon will rejoin us. For more information and quick signups, go to theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. Simon Young, glad to meet you. Thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Well, it was great to be here. Thanks so much.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at GCNLive.com. That's advertise at GCNLive.com.